français, italien, anglais. So we speak English. Yeah, I have to present my friend Sergio Porta, and before giving him the word, I should like to situate this day between the other day, the other day of the week. I was asked by Patrick Bouchain to be present the whole week and answer to questions if they occurred. But I'm a little puzzled about that because it's so undefined. I try to be ecological. Ecology is exactly no more the science of relations, of everything with everything. Nothing more. It's not as architects do think that it is about energy economy or things commercial or something. Just relations. So between a week, and a week is a form of time of 7 days that is sacred. It has never been changed for generations, millennia, etc. Except the French Revolution tried to have a week of 10 days. It collapsed. I should like to link, ecologically speaking, link the days with themes, 6 themes, and in a certain precise order. I don't want to begin about architecture and town planning. I don't want to begin with mechanical things or law things or abstract or geometry or narcissism of architects or any little part of it, but of communication. And the first communication should be the eco-ethology. We had that Monday. Well, a word about eco. Eco-ethology is different from ethology, at the sense that eco-ethology is designed to be in relation with all the other knowledge of man. Ethology alone keeps itself alone without too much relation with what is not ethology. I didn't invent it, it's official. So if you don't guess what is not said by your the person with whom you are speaking, you miss always something. If you imagine that he receives your word with his culture, with his deafness, because he chooses to understand what he likes and not the others, if you are not aware of that, it's impossible to communicate. Then ethology, the prophet is Konrad Lorenz, and his gray gooses, because he helped the chicken goose to get out of the egg, so the troop of the chicken gooses considered him as their mother and followed him always. That's an observation of comportment of how the animals automatically, by the innate and acquired, the two sources of behavior, are dealing with. They follow him, and at a precise distance. That's very curious. And when Konrad Lorenz stops, they stop at the distance. And when he's done this, they go nearer. And when he goes high, they return. Because they need an angle, which is the angle between the chicken, the virtual mother, and Konrad Lorenz. If he is too near, the angle is false. I feel that this is the very beginning of architecture. the angle is a proportion between two dimensions. And if you don't have a system of proportion or a living of proportion, you don't have architecture. The minimum is to know which is the difference between the base and the height, etc. That's so ethology was important to be aware that you are not alone living, alone thinking on the earth, and the communication is always bilateral with both sides. When you consider architecture after ethology, you see that a city is a living thing as a city, not alone as an agglomeration of individuals, but they have a different level of behavior, and the behavior of a city is a behavior of a living being which acts differently. You can't reasonably apply to a city a geometry, a fixed planning, so that everything is in the place you guess is the best. It's so far, for the moment, as a decision, as a study of mechanical precision in everything, and especially town planning, urban design, that alone the mistakes permit life, are living. It's awful, because if everything is in place, you have nothing to do then, just sleep. Not act, you have to act finally against that sort of geometric law. If you do understand that, which is eco-biology, eco-urban biology, you have to say it to other people and to communicate. That is an eco-pedagogy. And as a prophet, we have Carl Rogers, who is a psychologist. His simple definition of his work was client-centered therapy, no more. He just waits until someone asks him evidently a question. He doesn't try to force people to accept or to be something, he just waits. And in pedagogy, the non-directive systems, attitudes, are more efficient. The child is curious by nature. If he is ill, he is not any more curious of other things. But if you force him to feed him, to nourish him, he refuses. So lazy children are abnormal. It's not normal that the child is lazy or doesn't want to learn something. He's always curious. That is the face-to-face, the interface between the one who knows and the one who wants to know. There's a very subtle system, a subtle attitude. And it continues. If you have said it, well, there is a urban decolonization. I want to explain more about that. I guess that town planning and subsidiarity are enemies. No, not enemy, are two things that have no relation. They spoke about subsidiarity, about Maastricht, the European Union, etc. The definition is quite simple. We are a group, we decide what we are doing. If we can't decide, because something is too complicated, we ask two other people to help us to decide. Not that they have to decide themselves, because they are more intelligent, but together we may decide more safely. If it's not sufficient, you go to the technician, to the authority, to administration, to the king, to God, to I don't know what. But if it's always a help that is bottom up. Town planning bottom up doesn't exist. Everything as every system of designing a time planning, of managing how to live, how to share the space, etc., are always done by an authority, which the administration, who gives the authority to a town planner, who horribly invents in front of the problem his concept. They have such factories in the Netherlands where they fabricate architects and urban designers, and they teach them the concept before for them a case, an urban case, is a problem. That's mad, but it's the general problem solving, which was a intellectual system where everything was calculated from place to place to place, etc., without anyhow having the right to go back and correct your bad decisions. You go always in the same direction. Urbanism is not a problem. It's a human social behavior that needs a wholeness of capacities of an urban designer, not just a geometry or a statistician or a mathematician or an administrative. The law is very well done. The law, at least in Belgium, I guess here also, forces the urban designer to consult the inhabitants, the victims. And he has to do it. He has to announce that there is a procedure where they are invited between such and such time, published in newspaper with that height of characters, etc. The law says that, and he has to consult. He writes it down, he makes a report, but they didn't force him to do something with it. So normally the Dutch town planners at least take the report, put it in the dustbin, and try to get a concept, which is completely artificial. That's everywhere. Urbanism is also not clear. I say so, it seems evident between us, but it doesn't seem evident at all in the real life, except us. And it's a series of subliminal messages, unknown. You know, when one image out of 24 in cinema is drink Coca-Cola, you are not aware, having read it, that you have. So you go out to the cinema, you drink Coca-Cola. This has been forbidden now. But all the publicity is made of subliminal images. And town planner never avows which is which, who is in command, etc. So it produces the town planning as we know. We are civilized enough to defend ourselves against that, even if it seems to be very difficult, even impossible, to resist to this order and command. But in more precisely in other underdeveloped countries, for instance, and I want to speak about Rwanda. You know, Rwanda, Burundi, Central Africa, the Lake region. It's a tiny country, an ancient kingdom, and get the independence in the 60s. Without too much revolution, it came afterwards. And they elected a president, Kayibanda Gregoire, and the King of Belgium offered him buildings because he was very positive during the independence riots in Congo, in Belgian Congo at that time. So he received the ministry, and by chance I was asked to be the architect of that ministry, and in another building more warm than that, which is the presidents of the Republic, that is the administration, the welcome, localization, etc. And then they asked me to discuss with the president, at least to choose the location of it. And he explained to me that his building, that will be his building, that's okay, with an architecture, well, you can't imagine what architecture is, but he is very clear about the relations, the authoritarian relations and the influences. And he says, if we can rebuild my presidents in Kigali, which is the capital, exactly the capital was the place where in 1880 or something, the German colonel Tyot disposes his luggages and had a tent and stayed there, that made the Kigali as capital. But there is the embassies, the commerce, the military camp, etc. He says, I am not strong enough to resist to that influence, so I want to build my presidents 5 kilometers away on another hill called Kimihurura. And please, you design me a birth of a city, a sketch of a city, nearly nothing, that could be Central African and Rwandese. Well, what is a Central African city, a weaving of a city, contemporary? They have old cities and they know how it is. They have town planning spread completely in the country, like in Rwanda. It's not a city, it's not a town. They have commercial towns, they have religious town, portuary town, administrative, etc. But always it is a colonization of the European spirit, of the European intelligence, making grids or radio concentric, etc. They have, the colonial city is very simple. It's some round-shaped space where the blanks live, work, etc., with the monuments and the institutions. Then what they call the green belt, which is a sanitary distance, exactly, that is planted trees, etc., as parks or wild, but forbidden for the blanks or for the outside to build there. And then you have the compounds, or the villages and the grands ensembles of black cities that have no right to live and sleep in the white city. Apartheid was that on the maximum point of view. That is the model. By the way, it's always like that. It is not at all a cooperative form of a style of Central Africa. Well, I have been asked to design a Central Africa, which is nonsense. I can't design it. So I proposed him to let the landscape build himself spontaneously. That means we have a hill. The president building should be built there, 9 levels, to have a vertical thing on a country where we have just huts. That is the progress, which is important. And the progress is also occidental and colonial somehow, but it's one of the dimensions of it. And then, what? So, to add an urban form that could softly represent that geometry, which is an envy when it rays to, on everything, I proposed the minimum work that was a bulldozer going round with a cord of 180 meters, making a round shape of 360 meters diameter, and just trace, nothing else. But I'm sure that this will be a form that will adapt it adopted and adapted to all the needs, but something will always remain because we make presidents the round, and then I ask the landscape, the relief, the geometrical form existing in the mountain, to do the project. That means that to live, it's difficult to live on a street like that. So they will automatically discover that following the curve of levels, they will have something habitable. Probably. That's one possibility. We may lean on. Then to go pedestrian or vehicle like that, too hard. So we have to go an oblique and another. There is a crossing, there should be electricity, water, information, justice, administration, any kind of quarter necessities. Probably. And I tried to imagine that this is one, this is another, because it comes from the industrial thing that exists already, and that is another way on the valley, probably. But if it changes, it doesn't matter. The system remains open to any event that has a logic. So this and that and that and then the others, and then let the people do themselves. The model should be the shanty town as they are built, but with a sort of a communication system, which is the crossing, that's the minimum of form, and then they will build their own house as they do automatically in all the shanty towns. Shanty towns are done, and generally the bulldozer comes and crashes the whole thing to replace it by Belgian town planning with villas. It's a crime each time. So you have the state has to guarantee that these people receive the grant if they pay or not. That's another thing. But I don't propose revolution. I don't try to impose the personal, the private property, for instance. It doesn't exist. In Rwanda, the whole landscape belongs to all the people. There is no limit. The use of it, yes, provisory, it's not very long, but as in Belgium, the land capitalism doesn't exist at all. It's not sellable, the piece of ground. But they have to decide. I have no advice to give, naturally. But they have to settle somewhere with a certain security for 10 years or for 50 years, I don't know. They have to decide that and change when necessary. That is the non-system that allows to go in a direction, to act. Now, I have a remark to do. This is not utopia. Utopia is no place. It's designing a country that does not exist, designing another world outside, where you decide that this will be like that, and you are not guilty if you make an error, because it's another world. It's a sort of refuge for people that don't act in the reality. Here I have a Kayimanda Grégoire, which is the president, which is a living person with an attitude, with desires, with possibilities and impossibilities, etc. He exists. So I wanted to go on the other side of the scale and to invite 24 families, have a ground, too little, too dense, to do the spread, the sprawl as usual, and saying with the government authority, 24 families, each one has approximately that amount of surface or length of, and there is a street coming from a certain point to a certain point, not nothing, with circulation possible, and then ask the 34 families to design and build. With a European Belgian assistant I had, not to help them, to be silent always, not to give any advice, but to answer the questions if they ask. Why not? He knows things that they don't know. And to question, there should be a rule. They are free to do anything, but they have to explain it before beginning and say why they do it. So a consciousness is necessary, which is a modern thing, that is not just tradition. They have to explain the new events. The matter is that the one should do that and the other, but it's difficult without science. So we did ask two children to make models of houses. They know perfectly with mud how to do it, and very roughly on a slope. So if that has not been done, but that was the project, a real project in a virtual situation that didn't succeed. The other, they touched, they are recessed or before, etc. I don't know how, and I don't want to preview. So the assistant then, as in a theater, it rains, and when weather it rains hard. So they will see that the rain destroys their houses because they touch, so they will immediately discover the tube. I don't have to say there exists a tube, which is that object and that function. They will feel the need. That's an example for every argument. They feel the need, so they invent the object, which is easy. Then it's okay, rain is mastered, and the assistant comes with the model of a truck for the fire protection, the fireman, and he tries to go through on the little hamlet on the little road, and he destroys everything that has not the right length, the right width. So they will understand that for their own security, because he makes a fire there, and with his model truck he goes to the fire. That's clear. All those actions are to be invented along the life of it. This is not utopia, because we had Tade and Veneranda, which were the first family that will invite the others. They began to do it. Their realization began in that sense that we had a budget to do that little experience. I was paid to give plans that are no plans to the president, and the Ministry of Cooperation and Development said that I had no structure, administrative structure, to receive a budget and to spend it if I'm not an enterprise. So they chose an association to make that an administrative thing. And I received the president of that association that were the brothers constructors for third land. And he came at home, visited me, and we discussed, and suddenly he interrupted me and he said, "Well, you're architect, we have architects. You don't imagine, for God's sake, that we will ask two niggers how we have to design architecture." So that was the end of it. Then he went out with a budget. I had nothing more. So he built with the budget 7 houses that remained empty for 5 years, because when they say, "This is not a house." Well, it's not payable, all that thing. Then, about the plan, I am sure that finally the president did not receive my plan and my text, because the ministry, the Belgian Ministry of Cooperation and Development, was crowded with old colonialists. So these have looked at that and said, "It's mad. It has no sense, and it's a waste basket, paper basket." So that's the end of it. But it is no illusion. It's a piece of reality with real people. So that was over, and I thought about anything else. Until Sergio Porta, who asked me something that has not been published. So I proposed innocently him to publish the story of what I just told. Exactly how it went, what were the hope, publishing something, an interview of Julius Nyerere, South African, the bad and the good people, chief of states, statesmen, etc. But it did not interest no one. So the alone example I know towards reality, not dreams, is that for a decolonization town planning, so that the form comes from the ground from the population. I don't know, probably I'm ignorant, but I don't know any other example towards reality. Many utopian things, but it doesn't happen. So that's the story, and that is to prepare Sergio Porta to make another language than mine, which is more, let us say, emotional, sentimental, and warm, or near the others. And there are other point of view, and I need his point of view also. Could you come? Yes.
Okay, thank you for being here. Should I go ahead with the English? Right? Actually, a little bit, because my English is not that well. In any case, my name is Sergio Porta. I'm a teacher at the Polytechnic of Milan in urban design. And this presentation is about from Bauhaus to our uncle's house, all the complexity in urban planning, mapping, centralizing cities. Which is like to say everything on earth, more or less. From Bauhaus to Avant-Garde House refers to two of my favorite readings recently. From Bauhaus to Our House is the title of a booklet written by Tom Wolfe, which has a bad translation in Italian, which is Maledetti Architetti, which is more or less like those damned architects. And it's like a counter history of modernism in architecture. It's very humorous and hilarious somewhere, and very easy to read. I suggest everyone to have a look at the book. And the other is a reference to Jacques Tati's movie, Monarch, Our Anchor. It is a beautiful movie. Done in 1957, at the dawn of modernity, to some extent, at the dawn of the motor age in Europe and in the Western world. And that movie was about the conflict between the old city on one side and the new coming city, the city of tall buildings in a landscape, in a wasted landscape, and so on. That's a really beautiful movie. And I used to begin my course at the Polytechnic with that movie, which is sort of a surprise for the students most of the time. Okay, and these two images here are one the opposite of the other. On the right side, we have an image of ordinary life, daily life, in a dense city, probably Paris. Anyway, a city of the Western culture, an old city. And on the left side of the screen, you have the most technical image you can imagine. A top-down view, like if you were God, seeing the city, you know, from the sky. Also with kind of interpretation which speaks of technical and computer and IT technology and so on. So the point is here is that I am proposing this tonight, but keeping this in mind. So I am proposing a tool, a technical tool, with a strong scientific background beneath it, But the question that led me to this point was later here. So the question was, is there a kind of order beneath the ancient cities of Europe that we can understand a bit at least, that can help us as urban designers to build the leading city of the future? That is the question. Now, if I can sort of go speaking from the shoulder side, that is here. So I am basically speaking of these four things. The first is from the city of Athens to Montreal, right, for the age. The second is the new sense for the city of Athens. The city of Athens, as you know probably, is an expression of Mr. Le Corbusier, who thought that all the old cities of Europe were drawn for Athens, not for men. Because men, they know where they want to go, and so they go straight. Just asses go like here and there. And but the two first chapters are more like philosophical in a way. And they are not really what I want to say tonight. What I want to say tonight is the last two. So I'm probably going to rush throughout the first two chapters and spend a little bit more time for the last two. Next one. Monsieur Appel is one chapter of Jacques-Baptiste Mouton, and he lives, this Monsieur Appel, this one with the hat in hand, and he is living like in a modern house at the end of the 50s. And next one. And that was the beginning of the conflict between the... What's with this here? There's a problem with the projector for...
Maybe the black one.
Well, in those times, at the end of the 50s, a conflict was raising between traffic and what we can call local function. So traffic is quite obvious what it is. Traffic is cars in the street. But streets are not just for traffic. Streets and public spaces are also for public life. And so local function is what we can use for terming that kind of life, social life, and all the interconnection between people that takes place in the public space. So what Jane Jacobs, who is that girl here, what Jane Jacobs said was, local function is like a ballet. Local function is something that emerges in the public space, but that we cannot foresee most of the times. And she says it is like a ballet, not that kind of ballet where all the people do the same thing, but the kind of ballet where everyone plays a different role, and in a magic way that comes together to a synchronized performance. Next. So here we go with the new modernistic age. That the architecture for language and the architecture for life came in conflict very, very soon. Here we have an image of architecture for life, and here an image of architecture for language. So these are two different worlds. Next one. Next one. So, the architecture for language is for places, while the architecture of language is for deserts. Here you can find life. Here you can just find paintings in the world. It was painted. It is not a real man. So let's go on with the images. Next again. So, okay. The places where people can live, and the places where just people can live. And what can we do with that to favor that situation and counter that one? That's the question. Next. These are two different worlds. What is good in one world, the world of place, is most of the time bad for the world of language. In the world of place, we have an experiential arena. What counts is what you can experience in the other. While in language, what counts is what you can communicate. So we are in a mediatic arena. Next. Let's go quickly through this. Short time is what counts in the mediatic arena, while long time and trust counts in the other. Next. Difficult to read. We have an audience of city users on one side, while we have an audience of inhabitants in the other world. Fascination, enchanting is what counts in one world, while trust and hospitality is what counts in the other world. Then private space and interior life is against public space and social life on the other side. And then the local sphere and the global sphere are the two opposite corners over here. Okay, so if you have to design like a modern theater or an exhibition center, what you have to do is to let it emerge from the context. The more it emerges from the context, the best you do. The opposite happens in the world of places, where you have to reach an immersion into the context. And the more you are immersed within that, the best you do. Next. So we can very quickly say that we can imagine to have four different ways to do our work as architects. And depending on the kind of arena that you have and the orientation to language or place of the theme that you have to do, that calls for different levels of participation. Because this is more a question to the audience than a thesis for me. But I'm really convinced that participation cannot be taken as another rule. You can use more participation in certain cases, while in certain other cases, participation cannot be like a good thing to do, because it would stop the process, because it is not needed. So to understand what are the borders between one field and the other is not very simple most of the times. Let's go quickly through this. I'm not speaking of this. Next one. Next. These are different real cases taken from my experience that can be placed in one field or another. You can deal with some case with a participative approach, while in other cases a more artistic approach is needed, and in other cases a more civil approach as an ordinary architect, but sensible to the confrontation with some subject and with the public and so on. Let's go. So a wall has been built between the old city and the new city. In terms of architecture, you can see the new architecture on the background, while this is an image taken from Jacques T. movie, while on the back of the server you have the old city, which is the ruling town away at the end of the 50s. Let's go. So what happened really is that a way of building the city that came from more than 5,000 years before Christ, and that went very well ahead until the mid of the 19th century, suddenly was broken by new forces And we get placed to another kind of city. Next. The kind of city that comes from history is based on this nucleus in a way, or this core, which is pedestrian. And that at that time, around the mid of the 19th century, exploded in this way, but still maintaining an attachment to like the channel of public transport, so still maintaining a sort of shape which is controlled in space, while with the explosion of the mass automobiles, we have at this time a modern suburb city, which is literally without any constraint. Because the automobile let everyone to go everywhere without any limitation, conception. Then what should we do in this case? What should we do with the automobile city? Well, the idea is that we can understand where some centers are in the region, in the urban region, and we should base our design of public transport on these nodes here, so that we can call this city the new city for the future, the sustainable city of the future, the nodal information city. But when we speak of nodes, we speak of central places. So this is the first time that I'm speaking of centrality here, but centrality here is at the core of the image for the sustainable city of the future. If we don't understand where the central places are in the urban region, we cannot do, we cannot work for the sustainable city of the future. And let's go to Mr. Le Corbusier, who is seeing his masterpiece taken like a toy in his hands in this picture here. And he said, well, next one. He said, well, what the architect does cannot be changed by anyone. It is like a piece of art. Okay? So the least the project or the design is changed during the process, the best. And there is a sort of order that the architect has the power to interpret and the power to put onto the ground. And this is the kind of order that the architect should cross. It is a neat geometrical order. And you can find that kind of order both in plan for the new city of Chandigarh and in the design of the elevation of the building. So both as a urban and the architectural scale. Next. Next again. But who stayed behind Le Corbusier is Mr. Descartes, who said, I must read it on the screen here. Mr. Descartes said, we don't find so much perception in the realization made of different parts and by different persons than in those realized by a single man. So those old urban agglomerations, which began as small villages and through time became large cities, are so badly distributed if compared with those geometrically unique places designed by the vision of an engineer, that even if taking their buildings one by one, we could find in them much more. Looking at their distribution, here is more building, there is a big one, and at how they make the streets so windy and amusing, one would say that they were put there at random rather than following any plan of the rational man. So, that is the outcome of that kind of thinking. Nothing less than the destruction of the whole city of Paris with the Plan Voisin by Le Corbusier. The idea was that the old Paris should be demolished completely, with the exception of a couple of churches like Notre Dame. But the old center of the city should be demolished and substituted by the new one. So the idea was that 7,000 of city building was just a mistake, and a new city should be like invented from zero. Next. And this is a vision again from the Kabbalah. A vision that says that the city should be separated in different parts in order to host different functions. Separation is actually at the core of the modernistic society. But let's go on quickly. These are different images, because this is not just Le Corbusier, of course. It is a whole culture, the modernistic culture in urban design. And at that point, the idea to demolish the old fabrics spread it out, and from the end of the Second World War to the end of the 80s, and still today, I have to say, the demolishment of entire parts of the old cities is very, very often done. These are images of community. The red neighborhood had been completely cleared up in the United States at the end of the 60s. Next. This is Prodigo, a very well-known large social housing asset in St. Louis, and that is the new estate, which is very, very large, thousands of flats and so on. Let's go next one. This is how it was meant to be. Next one. And the like communal corridor that should be like the social meeting place of every building. That is how the one before was how it was meant to be, and the next one is how it was actually, how it became. Next one. And that is the end of the story for Totaga and St. Louis. Next. The end of the story again. And again, it is not just the matter of that estate. It is the matter of the most, if not all, social housing estates in the Western world. Next. So, a new science for the city of Assas. The city of Assas is here meant to be the old city. We need a new science to understand what the old city is. Next. And again. This is a sketch of science, modern science in a way, after the 17th century. Science is not just one thing. Science evolves like everything. So, for a long period since the beginning to, say, the end of the 19th century, science was one thing, and that was devoted to the understanding of simple problems. So problems with small number of variables that were interconnected between each other, but the number of variables taken into account was very small. Like the light in the sky is bright, sound, heat, or electricity. But statistical science came to the foreground when complex disorganized problems had to be dealt with. And in such kind of problems you have millions of variables. But such variables are not interconnected with each other. So you can use statistical science to grasp it and capture some clues of it. While if you have to deal with another kind of problems that are organic problems, where life comes to stage, you can't use no statistical science, no physical science. You have to use another kind of science that we can call the science of complexity. Next. Again. So the idea of Jane Jacobs again is that city planning uses just the first two kinds of sciences and less completely abandoned the third kind of science that actually began to come to stage at the beginning of the 20th century. Let's go. Let's go again. So, okay. How people interact? How can we understand the secret of complex systems that performs very well, that offers extraordinary performances, like our brain that can take decisions so quickly that we cannot even have a clue of it? If we touch something very hot, we say, oh! And many things in our brain rush to that point suddenly at the same time. This is an extraordinary performance of our brain. So what can we translate this to cities and to public spaces that work in social terms? Well, people interact like this. The complex system of people on Earth offers extraordinary performances. For instance, we are all here today, which is extraordinary, and there must be some secret in the way we are here, because we are all interested in the same things, probably, in architecture and city planning, and we have connection that brought all of us here. So the idea here is that everyone on Earth is connected with no more than 6 degrees of separation. It is a very popular gospel, and it comes from research of the late 60s, and that says that our world is actually very small. There is a small number of passages, of steps between all of us, even if we are very, very far away in space. And that's my son, Tommy. Next one. My son knows me very well. Next one. I know the mayor of my city. Next. The mayor of my city knows very well the Minister of Defense of Italy, who knows the former president of Italy, who knows very well George Bush. So we have actually 6 degrees, 5 degrees before the previous one. 28. We have 5 degrees of separation between my son and the President of the United States. Isn't that extraordinary? Next one. Probably many of you know this actor. He is Kevin Bacon, food lessons. And two students of a university in the United States one night came in conflict because one of them says that this was the king of the movie system. And the other says, no, that's not true. And so they invented a system to understand how many steps separated this actor, Kevin Bacon, from all the other actors of the movie system. And it came out that just 3 steps on average were between him and all the other actors in the movie system. Next. And this engine is online, actually, and I tried to do some tests about that. So I said, how many steps are between Kevin Bacon and Priscilla Presley? And I tested that, and it's actually just, let's say, just 2. Priscilla Presley was in, I can't read this.
Sorry, I have to go to the left.
The Hilda Presley after in Naked Gun, the final instance with Olivia Dukakis, and Olivia Dukakis after in Picture of Perfect with Kevin Bacon, just 2 steps. Well, then to the Italian actress, Anna Galina, 2 steps again. Anna Galina was in Venice Project with Stuart Thompson, and Stuart Thompson in Chess with Kevin Bacon. And then, actually, a very popular actress in Italy, but of a lower grade, a lower level. And here we have a big one, number 3, so 3 steps between Kevin Bacon and Antonello. Antonello was in Versione with Giancarlo Giannini. Giancarlo Giannini was in Joshua with Colin Kent, and Colin Kent was in Chess with Kevin Bacon again. Then we can go ahead and say how many steps between Alvaro Vitali and Ninja Rose. And astonishingly,
will just freeze.
So,
let's say you listen more
and then come quickly to the point.
Sociologists try to study what are the rules under this.
And they focused on one concept, the concept of sensuality. And they developed three basic measures. One is called the degree. If you represent, you can represent the complex system with the graph like this. The graph is a mathematical device made of dots, nodes, and rings. So if you count how many links converge into a node, that is the number. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 links are connected to J. J has a degree sensuality of 5. Next. So if you do that, let's again. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is degree sensuality of that node. Next. Another measure is closeness, so how much one node is close towards the other. In this case, how much two is close towards the other node in the sixth node. In this case, you have to count, you know, two is just one step from J, two steps from Bill, one and two steps from John, two steps from Mary, one step from you, and so on.
And if you sum it up, and you can find the closeness essentiality of Sue in this case.
Next.
This is betweenness essentiality,
which is about if you design the shortest path that connects any couple of nodes, then you can count how many of them pass through each node. So this is a measure of how many one person is the mediator in the relationship between all other persons in a social group.
So these three classical measures of sensuality were meant to let us understand the power of a person and how much a person is reliable in a social network. And we can transfer all this measurement from social to spatial networks. But I'm skipping this one. These are all kind of networks that are not spatial because they are social. These are all sorts linked by co-authorship relationships. These are economical organizations linked by cooperation in projects. This is the electrical web of the United States, which is a technological network, not social, but technological. Next again. The nematology elegance, next again. Next again. The federal region in Italy, an economical system at the global level, and this is the Boston patented inventor co-authorship network. Next again, and again and again. So many different networks. Since this is the airlines network of the United States, since they are self-organized, It comes out that they share some common properties. The property that these networks, all these networks so different, share, they have in common, is that they are so-called small worlds. So they have a very short average path length between two nodes, any couple of nodes, but at the same time they exhibit a very large clustering coefficient, which means that they are organized, they are not random. They are organized in a way. For instance, our social network here is quite highly organized because we all share a common interest. This is at the core of some secret that led every one of us here to
we share one interest. This is a principle of organization. We are not here for chance.
Okay, this is somehow obscure for probably for the most of you, but this is a power law distribution problem. Okay, that means that you have in a system just a few nodes that have a very high level of something, while the most of the nodes they don't have even any of that resource. If you are speaking of money, that means that a few people are very rich and a lot of people are very poor. If you are speaking of, I don't know, centrality, that means that a few nodes are very central, while the most of them are not central at all. And this is the kind of rule that you can find beneath all these networks, technological, social, organic, biological, playing predator networks in the ocean, in species and so on. Next. Okay, so we are speaking of order. All these questions came from the main question of all. Can we find an order beneath the old cities of Europe? An order, a complex order, a marvelous order, an order which seems disorder, but that is not disorder at all. An order which ensures the safety of the street and the freedom of the city, Jane Jacobs. That's all what sustainable urban design is about, to find out the physical order that sustains, fosters, contributes to the social order, the technological order, the economic order, the political order of the city, which have their own rules, structure and configuration. Next. Okay, let's go to the core of the question. Yeah. We are not the first, of course, to study cities using networks. There have been many different approaches to the network study of cities, but we are like skipping the most of them and going quickly to the MCAs, multiple centrality assessment that we have like invented. Three principles. The first, we use primal graphs rather than dual. The second, we use metric distances, not topological. The third, we use many pure centrality indices rather than just one. The first, primal versus dual graph. You can see on the top right of the screen four different 1 square mile maps of cities. You have Ahmedabad in India, Venice, Italy, Richmond and Walnut Creek. Okay? Then in the middle you have the same maps transformed in graphs. In primal graphs you have that one intersection is one node and one street is one link. In dual graphs you have entirely the opposite. One intersection is one link and one street is one node. The reverse. So the difference is that in the dual interpretation you miss the geography of the system. You know, this would be Venice. And it's totally different to the real Venice. The real Venice in the red one. Next. That's Venice. Next. The map of Venice. Next. This is the primal graph which contains the geography of the system. Next. And the dual graph that lose that, miss that. Second, metric versus test distance. Next. Okay, you have like three points. Point A is the origin, and point B and C are alternative destinations. And one would say that to go from A to B takes much longer than to go from A to C, which makes sense. Next.
actually, if you measure distance in terms of number of turns and not in terms of metric length, that is not true. Next. You have just one turn from going to A to B, and you have one turn from going to A to C. Next again. Next. Next. Okay. One turn from A to B and one turn from A to C. So the distance in the dual graph is one in both cases. They are at the same distance. If you use, on the contrary, the metric distance, which is much more natural in a way, we have that actually this is more than 1,600 meters wide in the other case, in that distance, which is much shorter than one. And it is actually less than 200 meters. Next one. We use many key illnesses, not just one. It's called the Dolce. These are the indices, you probably remember that, the indices that social sociologists use in order to measure social systems. And we use them actually, but we use the three of them and some other indices as well. Next. The one that we develop in addition is called information and say how much a node is critical to the whole, to the system as a whole. So what happens if we cancel one node from the system? How much the efficiency of the system as a whole is going to drop? That is the measure of the criticality of that node. Say for instance that a node is an intersection, a road intersection. What if a road intersection is stopped, like if there is a building site, for instance? So how much the system as a whole would suffer from a drop in its performances? This is information. We cancel that node, and we measure how much the efficiency of the system drops. So I'm not going deep into that, but just to give you an idea. And then what we did was to test this like package of indices and information on many different 1 square mile samples of different cities. Some of them are self-organized. They are organic patterns. They develop through time, through history. They have not been planned by any kind of central agency. They are evolving systems. While here, below, we have planned systems. They are the outcome of one decision, most of them. Next. We have analyzed all these 1 square mile maps represented in palmar graphs and in dual graphs. And this is a sample of the outcomes. The city is the same, Ahmedabad in India, an organic city. We have closeness, betweenness, straightness, and information, four different measures of potentiality. And in blue we have the palmar graph representation, while in red we have the dual graph representation. So the point here is that we can learn a lot. We can learn a lot from this. Because first we can learn that centrality tells different stories. We don't have just one central place. Every place in the city can be central, or can be less central, or can be not central at all, depending on how you measure it, which means depending on how you use it. The other lesson is that centrality does not strike out here and there at random. It follows chains. You can clearly see the chain of roads of high centrality on the foreground and on the background blue, like areas of lower centrality. then you can say that sensuality has a large descriptive potential of the city, because you can individuate single routes and single spots. Next. You can perform such a measure globally, let it be said. This is the same image on the top left of the blue square. This is performed globally. So from each node, you measure closeness with reference to all other nodes in the system. Here, you perform it locally, which means that from each node, you measure how much this node is far away, not from all other nodes, but just from the subset of nodes within a certain distance from it. In this case, 400 meters. In this case, 200 meters. And see how you can, how single areas of the city emerge. Do you remember the nodal information city image at the beginning of the presentation? The problem there was to understand how can we investigate where the potential for urban centers are in the city. Well, that's a way. Urban centers emerge. Next. This is Venice. And we actually are speaking in a room which is located more or less, let's say, here. And this is between us in Venice. And see how this map clearly captures the most popular rooms within the city. The Rialto Bridge, the Academia Bridge, and these are the most popular routes for walking throughout the city. Next. Next again. And here we go. What we have discovered, in essence, is that self-organized patterns, they exhibit a powerful distribution of centrality, especially for the information needs, while plants seem to not. So what we are saying is that, yes, there is an order. There is an order beneath historical cities. And this is not the only thing. The other thing is that order is of the same kind of what we can find in all self-organized systems of all other kinds, technological, social, biological, organic, and so on and so forth. Next. Well, I'm not going deep into this, but different images of different measures of different cities. And yeah, next. This is Barcelona. Spain. This is the global between-ness map of Barcelona. Sorry, this is the historical center. Here and here is the Rambla. Here the Arbo, the industrial area, the Diagonal, and so a highly descriptive potential. In red, you can find the most popular routes with many shops, social life, safety, and so on. Next. This is closeness performed at the local scale. 1,200 meters. Next one. Closeness performed at 2,400 meters. See the previous one, by the previous one. Previous one. Look at what happens in the historical core. The historical core here is split into two different parts. In the middle between the two, you can find a Rambla. That's the first time that when I looked at this image, I said, well, there must be something wrong here. I'm not from Barcelona, so I was convinced that the Rambla, the famous Ramblas, was the heart of Barcelona. But when I showed this image to the people of Barcelona, the Agency for Urban Ecology of Barcelona, they said, well, that's perfectly understandable because the Ramblas are the site of the ancient walls of the city. They have never been the core of it. They have always been the side of it. So historically,
The core of Barcelona is just so you have this part of the city, which is called the core. Then you have many different centers. Actually, are all the former urban centers. That actually are all the former urban centers, like this one,
that used to be autonomous from the larger city,
until the city
expanded with the Ensanque.
So all these local centers have been like have been overwhelmed by the expansion of the city. But with this analysis, they emerge again. So this analysis can read something which is deeply like embedded in the topology of the city. And here, at 2,400 meters, all the whole of the city performs like a whole. Which means that if you use the city at a certain distance, it performs in a certain way. If you use the city, like for instance, in bicycle, by bicycle, the city changes. If you move through the city by car, the city changes again. Let's see how Rosen performs at higher threshold. That's global closeness. It is like a target. So if you use the car in a way, that's the kind of Barcelona that you use. The core of pedestrian Barcelona is not this one, it is this one. Because you use Barcelona at lower distances. But the core of automobile-oriented Barcelona is more in this part of the city, which is exactly what the reality tells us. Next. This is straightness, which tells us how much a place is straightfully reachable from all other places in the city. Straightfully. So it minimizes the difference between the virtual straight line between any couple of nodes and the real line following the city. So you can say that Plaza de Gloria de Catalans is the real core of the system in terms of straightness. And we all know that what Cerdà wanted to do was to build a new core exactly in Plaza de Gloria de Catalans. Next. Okay, that's Glasgow. Very quickly. Between the global between it and Glasgow, again, a beautiful image of the scale of potential of cities in terms of social life. Next. This is closeness at 800 meters. Again, centrality, sub-centrality emerges from the background. Next. Okay, let's say this very quickly. This is the map of Savannah. This is the graph of Savannah, via Savannah. This is the minimum spanning tree of the same city, and this is the greedy triangulation graph. What does this show right here? The first one is a tree. So you don't have cycles, you don't have loops. It is a system without loops. Compound by the least number of leaves. So this system, with the same node, of course, the same node in the same position, but connected in a different way. So in this way you have the least cost, because you have the least total amount of leaves, which means trees. But at the same time you have the highest, the least efficiency of the system, because if you have to go from one point to the other, you can go like directly to that, but you have to do a long trip, because this is a tree. On the contrary, in this case, if you want to go from here to here, you have many opportunities to do it very quickly, But at the same time, you have a large amount of this. So this is very costly. Keep that in mind. Next one. Okay, let's see this one. If you have here the cost of the system and here the relative efficiency of the system, you can see a very important thing. So the medieval palace, they had among the highest values of efficiency, but with a low cost. The same level of efficiency is typical of gridiron streets, but gridiron streets like New York or Los Angeles, they achieve that efficiency at a much higher cost. So you have a small world here. And that small world is typical of medieval cities, no matter if they are Arabic, European, Christian, Islamic, rich, poor, on the mountains, on the seas, on the plain, whatever. Next. So, the question is here, are you telling something that makes sense or not? We don't have any proof that more sensuality leads to more social life, to more security. Of course, first of all, we are speaking of just one aspect of the complex life and reality. So, I'm not saying that anymore. I mean, we are not fools, so we perfectly understand that the topology of the system is just one thing. Then, if you put 10,000 people, 10,000 poor people in a place all at once, then you are facing a deep social problem that has nothing to do with the topology of the system, of course. But just staying to the topology of the system, you can do something for fostering good life. Next. So we have done some studies of the correlation between centrality and some indicators of life in cities. This is Bologna, the centrality of Bologna. Next. Closeness centrality in this case, closeness centrality and density of closeness centrality. I'm not explaining deeply what density means, but you know, they are the same image in a way. This is the density space and this is just the centrality. Centrality, density of centrality. Next. And here you have the density of shops and services in the same city. And you can say, you can see, even visually, that there is a strong correlation between the two. Next one. So what we are searching is a correlation between centrality, in this case, closeness, but you can do that polar indices, bikinis for instance, and the dynamic of cities. In this case, the dynamic is the bigger one. In this case, it is shops and services. Next. This is the result. No, global bikinis, commerce and services. And here we have a large table of the results of the statistical correlation between sensuality and services. And they are put, they are ranked by the person index, and the person index is the index of correlation. So what comes up from here? It comes out that actually bikinis is the most correlated centrality measure to community shops, retail shops, and community services. Which makes sense a lot. That was exactly what we were expecting. Because bikinis is how much a place is in between the routes for going from each place to each other place in the system. So how much a place is traversed, is passed away, passed through, when you go from each other place to each other place. So, this common experience, you know, when you use a city, most people from the most following the most diverse plans and purposes, they happen to pass to the same places. Such places have the highest betweenness centrality. And do you have a lot about cities that is based about the flows of pedestrians? For instance, if you are if you have to locate a grocery shop, you must locate it where the most of the people are passing through. So all secondary services, all secondary retail commerce are based on the unplanned flow of person in the social place. Of course, if you run a first, like a primary function, like an airport or a football arena, that doesn't follow this rule, because if one person wants to go to the football arena or to like a large shopping center, they go straight to that place. They don't stop in the middle. They don't use the city. They just go there. They have that purpose and they go there. But how many times you stop a bit for like project? Yeah, I need to buy this. Oh yes, let me just take a look at the bookshop. Okay. That's the basis of modernity. Next. Okay, that's the last image of the presentation. This was also the first one. If you remember in the first image with the title of the presentation, I presented this image. This is Ahmedabad in India, and this is betweenness. The betweenness centrality calculated over the nodes of Ahmedabad's diagonal graph. And one friend of mine who happens to come from Ahmedabad, India, he's studying in London, but he's from Ahmedabad. He gave me this image coming from the thesis of one of his students. And this image is about Ahmedabad. And in blue, you can find the retail commerce district of Ahmedabad. And in black, you have the main religious centers. And if you compare this square, 1.9, with this one, you can find that literally the location of shops and services and even the core of the system, which is the mosque here, are located in the most central between the central doors. That's it. Thank you very much.
They have a bit better method in a way. I know. So you have questions?
Would it be helpful or did you find any examples where you said something like this and they weren't superimposed at all? So there was a completely different structure in the shops and
No, never.
No,
it's always like this. Well, actually, I have to say that the work on correlation is just at the beginning. We have been working for 3 years on this research, and we have developed a tool. We have tested on the 1.9 mesh. Now we are involved in large researches in the UK on analysis of 5 cities and 15 neighborhoods between those cities. And so we are developing the correlation analysis. And these are just the first results. But all the results that we have are astonishingly coherent. It seems like I'm surprised.
You could use it as a tool, a planning tool, for example.
Sorry?
You could perhaps use it as a planning tool as soon as you found out that there's like opportunities, you know, points or dots that are in the map on the left and not yet fulfilled in the map on the right.
Yeah. The idea is that if we can state that there is a correlation between some centralities and some land uses, the idea is that we can use this as a planning model. But you know, you can use many things in the planning process. This is not the truth. It's just a way of looking at cities.
So I would never want this to be used like a key to take decisions. It is just a different representation. But the idea is that, for instance, if you have to renovate a social housing estate, and the most of them are segregated in the city, the problem is that mostly, from the point of view of the parents of people, they are not integrated to the other places. So, if you have alternative layout to test, in this way you can have a clue of how, of what of these alternatives may perform better than the other. Yeah, just an idea. Yeah.
Have you thought of using this technique of mapping centrality on more peripheral conditions?
In more so?
Peripheral conditions like suburbs or places where they don't have, let's say, an urban pattern which relates to the historical.
We don't have correlation analysis in suburbs, but we have performed that kind of analysis. And what comes out is that, I mean, we have performed centrality analysis in one square mile places. And can you come back to the Glasgow image or the Barcelona image? Back again.
Okay. That's Glasgow. So this local closeness, that means that we are not performing an analysis of the whole city, and we are performing that on the whole city, but taking each place in a local way. So the most of these places are in the suburbs, as you can see. But even in such condition, we can find that topological and geographically there are some places that seem to have more potential to develop and local standards than others. There's nothing more to say, and there's nothing more than that, you know. Then this is a potential based on the geography of the city. Then many other conditions have to emerge to bring the place and develop that into a center. Architectural and social and economic and so on.
So I find some of these aspects of this past very compelling. I mean, how you can map this idea of closeness or in betweenness. But you started with this idea that this mapping was motivated by experience, by getting, you show these two photos once, you know, like a scientific map or. And then this kind of more romantic black and white photo
yes.
of the cat and maybe Paris in the 19th century. I'm wondering the limits of this kind of mapping, which to a certain extent depends a lot not only on the notion of urban composition, that you take your cue from the idea that somehow the formal organization of street patterns can somehow speak of urbanity, let's say, so that if you're looking at a grid or some other formal composition, you expect that there's maybe less urbanity than in something which is, let's say, a more picturesque configuration, not giving one more value than the other. Because there seems to be, for example, if I look at the photograph, some people in fact in some of the shorter social housing estates are very proud to live there,
yes.
And they have very strong memories and are against having these places destroyed. So it, one, I find it very intriguing, the map, because it does reveal things, but I think it's also risky to take it too far, because the social content somehow disappears, and the reality sometimes is quite different from what we can understand from the graphic representation.
I would never say that now. I totally agree with you. There is a risk in such maps. There is a risk whenever you use technical tools to describe reality. The risk is that you are reducing reality to one point of view. And because these kind of tools are very effective in communication and seem to reveal some kind of truth, they are very dangerous. So they have to be handled with care. On the other side, everything we are talking about here is about evolution. Some patterns are the outcome of an evolutionary process, some are an outcome of very reduced process in time and complexity. So, yes, I'm saying that the more evolutionary a process is, the more complex it is, and the more lively the place is likely to become. And so I would never suggest to clear up social housing estates. I'm pretty much more about the remolition that Lucienko teaches about. So that kind of taking an estate and build over the values that you can still find within it. But at the same time you should have the freedom to put your hands onto it and to transform it, to modify it, to break the rules of that. That's a rigidity. You know? That has nothing to do with clearing up everything. I think that if you use, I mean, my hope is that this model can help in doing that kind of demolition, not just at the architectural scale, but also at the scale of the urban model of such estates, for instance. Because they, for instance, they mostly use the super block of the Red Grenadier. The super block, okay? They are very large. They are astonishingly large. Some of such estates are larger than this. Okay? And they are just one estate. So, in many estates like those in the last 5 or 6 years, the strategy has been to fragment such estates in smaller parts, putting streets into them in order to make them more integrated to the urban context, within the urban context. And so this tool can help in understanding what layout is better, putting streets into them. So the demolition in that case is a demolition at the urban scale, at the scale of the urban model, not just at the architectural scale.
Just a small question.
Yep.
I didn't quite understand the diagrams of steps between people, the connections. You showed one, you said there are 2 steps between this person, or 3 steps, or 6 steps, for example, between your son and George
yep.
Bush. I didn't understand what.
Well, in that case, you can represent a system in many different ways. So, sociologists used to represent social systems using nodes to represent people and links to represent linkages of knowledge, reciprocal knowledge, acquaintanceship, or professional interaction. It depends on what you're studying. But in that case, it was people and relationships of knowledge. The but we are working in a special so the big difference is that why in a social system the position of each person doesn't matter at all. In this case, the position of each intersection matters a lot. If you change this piece of reflection and you bring that here, it changes everything. Okay? This perception has an X and this has a Y in space. That changes everything. And actually, the understanding of a spatial system is very big at the very beginning, while the understanding of a social system and ecological system have a good 10 to 12 years experience. So we are like pioneers in the sciences. I don't know if I answered the question.
Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. Not just
it's just again that I think it makes a big difference, for example, in that connection, that whether it's a social system or a spatial system.
Mm-hmm.
For example, what the node is.
What is?
What the node really is. George's question is very different from someone else. And if I just say, oh, I'm 6 steps away from someone,
yeah,
maybe it makes a difference. I could look at a network and imagine it like a star system, or imagine it this, but the content, what it's supposed to signify, is important.
It is.
And so, I think understanding was, for me, a bit abstract. I understand better as you explain that.
Well, the idea is that it is easy to find your path to reach George Bush, because George Bush is a famous person, a public person. But the idea is that if you actually connect yourself to...
Like, not everybody wants to be connected to George Bush. Not everybody, maybe some people want to be
That's not what you say. But if you want to find your path, the path that connects you with a fisherman in the Papuasi Islands, you know, that's much more difficult. But the idea is that the path is still there. The problem is to find it. So, Stanley Milgram, who performed such experiments, actually did that, excluding famous philosophers. So he did that before the mainstream. And that worked. But, you know, that's just sociology. It has nothing to do with spatial systems.
Okay, thank you.